little something between you and me. Don't cost you nothing, this one's for free.
Form choice, you know, potentially happens. People come in with Google or Daily Mail or whatever. This is what I want. We're not in that space, and we're neither in the space where I can know best. Because I, at the very least, and I think Keith did that really nicely, someone says, well, you're paid a lot of money, Doc. You tell me what. You know, my preferred way of handling that is a sort of preemptive strike. Yes, I do have one or two, you know, ideas and thoughts about how we might proceed. But I can't know what's right for you without you being involved in that. I need to know what's going to fit in your world, what fits with what matters to you. And for that, I need you to be part of this. And that's my way of essentially saying I am still omniscient. We all know what omniscient means. We're all omniscient. Omniscient. Okay, all knowing, as in omnibus or... and omniscient, whatever the Greek word knowing is. All-knowing, cognizant would be another, same stem. Okay, so in the middle, you've got patients and clinicians who are better informed, well-informed if we can be, and have knowledge, and there's all sorts of debates about knowledge, and knows what's important to them. And of course, lots of us don't know what's important to us until we are in the situation or start to talk about it. And there's a rather nice idea that we move from sort of prior preferences to informed preferences. So what I think I know, oh, okay, now you've said that, I think I know something slightly different, okay? And makes a decision consistent with their values. Okay, so that's a reasonable definition. This, I think, is a really useful slide. This is from a guy called Al Mulley, who's very big in shared decision-making in the States, really bright guy. And this comes from a paper called The Epidemic of Silent Misdiagnosis. And the misdiagnosis he's talking about is the misdiagnosis where either a patient is unaware of treatment or management options and the outcomes and consequences and what goes into that treatment, and a clinician is unaware of a patient's circumstances or preferences, what matters to them. And if either of those pertain, or if both pertain, you lightly make a decision of poor quality. And there's lots of examples of this. Can you give me examples of good evidence of poor quality going on now, poor decision quality going on now? I mean, you're being very careful. I know, I can see you.
Ben, you want to say something.
Fantastic, Ben. Go on, say it, man.
I was going to say Brexit.
Okay, right.
I was going to say Trump.
Right. Okay. I think Brexit is probably a really good example, but I was really thinking of something, you know, like concordance. So we know that concordance to medication is not good. And I think it's something like, well, do you know how many people cash the first antidepressant script? Mm. Actually go to the chemist and get it. Do you know?
60%?
Actually, I used to say 50. It's actually 80%. But only about 50% cash the second one.
The numbers in the UK are different from elsewhere in the world. So if you're paying for your prescriptions, it's completely different.
Yes.
So the numbers from the States are more like 40%.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, and a friend told me about a practice that they knew of where there was a hedge on the way into the practice, and they would occasionally find prescriptions in the hedge. Cash prescriptions in the hedge, which are a very good sign that a decision of poor quality has been made if someone walks out and stuffs it straight into the hedge. And here's the bad news, we are probably all still doing that every day, or at least every week. We will be giving a prescription which in fact has never settled as really what was collectively wanted. And those are occasions where we failed, and for lots of reasons, to arrive at a shared understanding of what might be the most useful thing to do here. I mean, some of those occasions are the patient was very pleased to let us feel like we'd arrived at a shared understanding, but actually for other reasons they weren't prepared to share with us, didn't have that understanding.
It's interesting you say that because every now and again you're surprised by the patients whenever you use ICE in this sort of these type of scenarios, it's actually quite insightful because when you get to sort of management, having established ICE, it's quite interesting how patients will come in with a problem. They'll tell you, well, I've got a cough and da 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 or whatever it was, and then you think, right, I probably want antibiotics or whatever, But when you've actually said, well, what are you hoping for today? They'll say, actually, I just want a bit of advice.
Yeah.
So if you sort of, if you've not tried to establish that and you get to the end and you're thinking, antibiotics, and you know, you can miss it in case of antidepressants as well.
That's why we bang on about ice. Yeah. And why it is so important to discover what was it that you were hoping was going to happen today. And of course, what people hope at the beginning may not be what they hope halfway through or at the end, of course. And you can't hold people to that. But unless we know about that, and there's a whole really interesting literature about the degree to which people are constrained by unwritten rules about what they think should happen in consultations, one of which is that they're not meant to say what they think is going on, because that's your job. Some of them don't want to say it because they want to see whether you get it or not. And, you know, you must, I don't know whether you yet have had that experience where you arrive at the end and say, well, I'm really pleased you said that, doctor, because I was hoping you would understand, you know, that that's what was going on. It would have been helpful if you told me that in the first place. There is a really, one quick aside, there is a really interesting piece of work by a guy called Martin Fisher called Right Conversation, Right Time, where he looked at what are the unwritten rules and then tried to give patients an instruction guide for how doctors consult. This is what they do. And he divided it into three phases. They ask questions to try and understand what's happening. P.S. They're really keen to know what you think might be happening. They then work with you on management, then we get a decision. And actually gave people these instructions and tried to sort of facilitate the effective running of consultations. And we have in our practice, and have done for about 20 years now, a thing called 10 Tips for Getting the Most Out of Your Consultation, which is like an instruction guide to the consultation, which is on the waiting room chairs, which tells people all sorts of stuff they may not know. Like, we really like you to bring lists. We love if you bring someone with you, because actually it saves time, doesn't increase time. You know, we really want to know what you think might be going on, those sorts of things. We're really happy for you to record your consultation because you forget lots of it. All that sort of stuff. So this is the crucial bit. So what is the FCM? Okay, well, because there's lots of unwarranted variation, and it would be nice if there was less unwarranted variation. So that's those are, it's an old slide, PCTs and how much knee surgery is done. You'll remember the sort of tonsillectomy, 1920s, the sort of epidemiology of tonsillectomies in the UK. Someone looked at how many tonsillectomies were done, and look to see whether it was dependent. Well, what do you think influences most the number of tonsillectomies done, or grommets, or nowadays stenting? What influences the cardiac, you know, cardiac
stenting? Specialist services locally.
Correct. The number of people with the piece of kit is a much better fit for the number of those procedures done than the number of folk with illnesses requiring those procedures. Okay, and so all sorts of other things influence the you know, access to services and what gets done, which aren't about shared decisions about what might be best. So, for example, poor people present late for their knee replacements and get them when they're already unfit and don't do so well. Rich people present early, get their knee replacements too soon, probably.
Let's hear it for our GP. Skills improving, risk removing, no confusion.